I'm Tristan Brand. This is number 0257, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0257. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Kip Marlowe, who talks about social media in the workplace. Sometimes it's good for business, sometimes it's not.
It's kind of a catch-22, so to speak. It depends on the industry, depends on what you're doing with social media. Many businesses use Facebook as their business-to-consumer sales website, so to speak, and they're just going to post. By the way, they're just going to post articles or something about their company or try to sell stuff on it. But there are other companies where people sit around at their desk and go onto their own Facebook page, and that is a huge, huge problem.
Debbie Holmes, author of How to Help Others Without Losing Yourself, talks about people in the service of helping others and how they can avoid burnout.
I found a lot of people in the helping professions give so much of themselves that they're losing who they are and what they are all about along the way. And we've seen a lot of people go down that road where they're just not themselves and they can't find time to do anything personally, and they just lose sight of who they are along the way.
Jan Marshall, author of Dancing Schmancin with the Scars, finding the humor no matter what.
I myself had a brain tumor and cancer and a broken nail, you know, things like that. And so dancing is kind of a code word for just finding pleasure. Whatever gives you pleasure in life, just keep dancing with it. Just keep going is what the theme of the book is. It has mostly humor, satire on the new technology and internet dating and weight and everything that everyone else is dealing with, and I find the absurdity in it just to get through it.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0257, was photographer Tristan Brand, a really excellent photographer and a very nice guy as well. You can check out his website at tristanbrand.com, and you'll find the link on the What's On page on thestufffile.com. And thank you very much, Tristan, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, as if security isn't harrowing enough these days, at the airports anyway, police say a drunk man at San Francisco International Airport posed as a TSA agent and patted down two women in a screening area. The 53-year-old was a ticketed passenger who had passed through a security checkpoint and began drinking at an airport lounge. After a few hours, he approached a female traveler and convinced her to go into a private booth with him. The man somehow obtained plastic blue gloves, and he looked the part of a TSA agent because he was wearing khaki pants and a blue polo shirt. Officers said it was unclear what exactly happened inside the private booth, but they think he may have groped the women. TSA agents later spotted the man as he took another unsuspecting female into the booth. They confronted him and detained him until police arrived. You know, somebody needs to give this guy a job, because if he can talk not one but two women into letting him feel them up, and all the while he's had five or six Manhattans, that is a skill that needs to be harnessed for productive use, for good, not evil. Anyway, he was arrested for public drunkenness and may face additional charges. Meanwhile, you know, those two women should be getting ready to sue somebody right about now. That's just sloppy, TSA. Just sloppy. Anyway, a waitress in China shocked customers at her restaurant by swallowing an entire cockroach off a customer's plate on purpose. A businessman, Xiang Yan, who was dining at a hotel restaurant in Chengdu, was not pleased when he found a cockroach in his salad, and he made his opinion known. his server, Jin Kuo, informed him that finding a bug in his food was completely normal. To show that she meant what she said, the 39-year-old snatched up the roach and swallowed it whole. Thanks to a customer with a cell phone, the entire incident was captured on camera. In the video, Jin can reportedly be heard saying, "No matter which restaurant you go to, you will always find cockroaches in the food. It is very normal." Ooh. Maybe he was impressed by what he'd seen or disgusted, but Yen didn't argue any further and simply paid his bill and left. The restaurant owner has since apologized for the culinary cockroach display. Hey, everybody needs a little protein in their diet, huh? Yeah. And according to Kentucky police, a shoplifting suspect who was arrested on suspicion of stealing $36 worth of beer didn't call someone to come bail him out during booking. He called Domino's. While Corbin police were booking Michael Harp for shoplifting and alcohol intoxication in public, he allegedly asked to use his cell phone. A short time later, a Domino's delivery person showed up with five pies. Now, according to police, they were able to link the call back to Harp's cell phone. Harp reportedly told the pizzeria that his name was Captain Wilson, one of the officers who helped arrest him. He denies ordering the pizzas. "I'm wrongfully accused of this here. They're charging me with two felonies over this pizza deal because I had a phone inside the holding cell," Harp said. "There are about 10 people who probably use the phone, so it's hard to say. Like I said, I never heard anyone say a word about Domino's pizza. Any of it." Well, thanks to the pizza prank, Harp is facing additional charges of theft of identity, theft by deception, and impersonating a police officer. He plans on fighting the matter in court. Are you buying his story? Yeah, I didn't think so. If he weren't drunk, I would have easily made him the idiot of the day, but I didn't. And that comes later. And we have time for one more story in this section of Stuff File News before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. When a driver ran from sheriff's deputies in Daytona Beach, Florida, after a traffic stop, backup officers swarmed the area to search for him. After a deputy briefly spotted him, someone called 911 to report that the person they were looking for had driven away in a car. Another call from the same number reported that the suspect was across town. Deputies kept looking in the same area where they had last seen the driver and saw him again. The driver again ran, but was subdued with a taser. 31-year-old Herbert Foster was carrying a cell phone. Deputies checked it and say the phone had the same number as the 911 caller. Foster was charged with making false 911 calls, drug possession, resisting an officer without violence, and driving with a suspended license. Because they always, in these stories, seem to have suspended licenses. Now, although they caught him by spotting him, did he ever stop to think that by making repeated 911 calls, he basically created a homing device that would eventually lead to his capture? Did he ever think about that? No. Again, somebody else. I could have made the idiot of the day, but I did not. And again, that comes later. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Social media in the workplace can be a hot-button topic, as more employees are reprimanded or even fired over things they choose to post on their social media channels, and employers are paying more attention to what their workers are tweeting and saying. On the line with us right now is Kip Marlowe, founder and president of Marlowe Surgical Technologies and the author of The Entrepreneurs, Success and Sacrifice. He joins us on the line right now from Ohio. Hi, Kip.
How you doing, Peter? It's great to be on your show.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So this is becoming a big problem on several levels, because I know some companies, and I work in the media, so it's the opposite, where we're actually forced to be on social media. Not that it's a problem for me, but there are some people who aren't accustomed to it, and they're being forced to do it. And on the other side of the coin, there are people who are being forced to stop doing it.
That's right. It's kind of a catch-22, so to speak. But it depends on the industry, depends on what you're doing with social media. As you know, many businesses use Facebook as their business-to-consumer sales website, so to speak. But and they're just going to post. By the way, they're just going to post articles or something about their company or try to sell stuff on it. But there are other companies where people sit around at their desks and go onto their own Facebook page, and that is a huge, huge problem today.
Are there ground rules that are being set up? Is there a proper etiquette to this when it comes? Let's talk about it, first of all, from the company's point of view, from their enforcing or not enforcing what their employees can or cannot do.
I know I'm in the small business ecosystem, so to speak, and some small business people just refuse to allow them on Facebook, and it's in their human resource manual that the employees have to sign. But other companies and other business owners and managers are kind of loosey-goosey on it. When they see it, they try to say, hey, you know, let's go back to work a little bit. It's like the old cigarette break where we all went outside and had a cigarette break for 10 minutes. This is like the old cigarette break where instead you have a Facebook break. And many people tolerate it. And I think one of the things that startles me is, well, one of the things that actually did startle me was there was a survey done of people, adults, 19 to 33, and they all said, well, the majority said that they would rather have a job where they can use Facebook and make less than have a job where they couldn't use Facebook and make more.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
That's kind of hard to believe.
It blew my mind, but there it was. It was an independent poll. So times they are a changing.
Well, let me ask you this question, because when it comes to Twitter, for instance, anybody can follow anybody on Twitter without your say, per se. If you are on Twitter with your own given name,
yes,
anybody can follow you. With Facebook, it's slightly different. Someone can friend you when you accept. So what's the etiquette on not accepting your boss's friend request?
Oh, wow. If it's your boss, you accept it. I think you have to be careful. And so many of us have 1,000 and 2,000 followers or likes on their Facebook pages, and most of which the people don't even know them. And I think you really have to be careful. I had a situation where I lamented Mrs. Lady Thatcher's death a couple of years ago, and I had a guy from Florida who was on my Facebook page actually say some pretty nasty four-letter words on my page. So I befriended him. But if those words were on a desk, on a laptop, in a company, and somebody walked by and saw them, that could be sexual harassment. That could get somebody fired.
Mm.
So you have to really, really be careful who you accept as a friend or a follower.
One of the other things, too, you talk about some of the situations where HR actually makes people sign that they can't use Facebook or social media at work. However, more and more these days, people are using social media on mobile devices, and you can't really police to a certain degree what somebody's doing with a mobile device as opposed to a desktop or a laptop.
No question about it. That's a huge problem because those smartphones can do anything. You can have your whole business in your smartphone or your iPad. And so there's no question about it. And it's going to be very, very difficult as time goes on for organizations to police that. So I don't know I really don't think anybody should get fired being on it, maybe even a little too much. But when I had a business, and there was no such thing as Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter, but my employees would use our 800 number to make calls to their kids in college and their relatives out of state. And that, too, was a waste of money for the company. And you just had a hard time policing all that. And you want to be, you want to be a good person as far as a manager or a business owner is concerned and put up with a few things. But in most instances, there are people that are on Facebook, you know, an hour a day at work, and I think that wastes a lot of money. Mm. And I'm tired of being on Facebook and have somebody, you know, talk about the and give a picture of what they had for dinner last night.
Oh, food porn. Food porn. I'm tired of that too. We've touched on some of the bad things as far as using social media at work is concerned. Let's talk about some of the positives. There are some advantages for companies. I know certainly in the media there are, which is what I'm in. But there are, just general businesses, there are some advantages to having employees on social media, correct?
Oh, I think so. It depends on, if you're communicating with a customer and you can do it on Facebook because that customer likes that, then that's fine. If you have a new product with your company, or I have a friend of mine that has a gourmet soap market, and she always comes up with good new products, and the soap is just so eclectic and has all kinds of aromas. She even has soap for guys. She'll put it on her Facebook page, and that's the good part about it. It's basically free marketing.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about your book, because I mentioned the book, The Entrepreneur's Success and Sacrifice. What will people find when they venture into your book, and who did you write the book for?
I wrote the book because there are less and less companies being formed today, at least in the United States, than ever before. I mean, we used to have 600,000 startups a year in the United States. Every single year, now it's down to 400,000, and there's a lot of reasons for it. But I wanted to just tell the stories of 22 entrepreneurs that are mostly under-the-radar type people that do between $5 million and $175 million a year in business, who started with nothing, mortgaged their future and their kids, and ended up being able to execute their ideas and their plans. And it's just absolutely incredible what I've seen. And I'm hoping that my book will encourage, inspire, and teach entrepreneurship to people all over the world that are interested in starting a company. They've got a dream.
And would you say, besides their desire and their dream and their stick-to-itiveness, that in some cases, being ahead of the curve in how to use social media properly is helpful to these entrepreneurs that you write about in your book?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, all the people in my book have a Facebook page, and we talk all the time. So, I'll put my book on my Facebook page and just say, hey, I told everybody I'm on four radio shows today, and it's wonderful trying to sell my book. And people just came out of the woodwork and said, hey, congratulations, fantastic. That's a good part of social media. And so it is needed. It's just a double-edged sword.
But like you say, when you talked about that situation with Margaret Thatcher, you got to worry about the internet trolls out there.
Yep. You got to be careful. You really have to be careful. So the best thing to do is make sure that if somebody friends you or likes you or follows you, make sure you know, you really research it. Make sure you either know who they are or look them up. Look at their Facebook page. See what's going on with them. See what they post. And if they're, they post good things and they're good people, well, then accept them. If they're questionable, just ignore them.
Good advice. The book is The Entrepreneur's Success and Sacrifice, written by Kip Marlow. Kip, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you for letting me on. This is a wonderful experience.
Kip Marlow, author of Entrepreneur's Success and Sacrifice. You can go to my website at thestuffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0257, and you'll find links to Kip's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Informed or entertained? Hey, you're doing both. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about avoiding burnout in the health sector. Plus, we'll meet the author of Dancing Schmancing with the Scars, finding the humor no matter what. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day. And, of course, a lot more Stuff File news coming your way right here, right now, on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, a Georgia man who appeared to be highly intoxicated was arrested after allegedly telling an Oconee County officer that his dog drove him to the store so that he could purchase corn. According to the Oconee County Sheriff's Office Facebook page, Sergeant Partain responded to a call about a dog in a hot car. When Partain arrived on the scene, he encountered a canine in a locked vehicle that had a temperature which was clocked at 123 degrees Fahrenheit when measured with a handheld thermometer. Partain also saw a can of gasoline inside the vehicle and said the smell was stifling. The car's driver, Wesley Terrell, allegedly told Partain that the dog drove him to Bell's to buy some corn. The 60-year-old suspect was arrested and charged with animal cruelty and driving under the influence, and Animal Control took the dog into custody. Now, there's a definite hole in his story. I mean, if a dog were indeed able to drive a car, it would also be capable of opening the windows or turning on the air conditioning. I'm just saying, either the dog is stupid or Wesley is. I think you can guess which one I'm leaning toward. Anyway, three 17-year-olds were driving in Altadena, California, when they saw one of their teachers. It was past dark, so they stopped. The teacher then asked for a ride, to which the driver agreed. This according to a spokesman for the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. Now, I said the police are involved, so you know this story can't be possibly ending well. And by the way, they picked up the teacher, even though the teacher seemed to be intoxicated. The teens became afraid of the teacher and stopped and got out of the car. The teacher, John Edward Mouse, age 34, said he wanted to go to Jack in the Box and order the juveniles back into the car. Fearing for their well-being, the juveniles re-entered the car. At some point, they say Mouse pulled a knife. They took him to the fast food restaurant, but one of the students called 911 on his cell phone. When Moust saw a police helicopter, he fled but was arrested the next day and charged with three counts of kidnapping. And that, boys and girls, is how addictive Jack-in-the-Box tacos can be. And you know, there's staying for detention after school, and then there's really staying for detention after school. Anyway, moving right along. 27-year-old Peter James Bonfiglio of Port Charlotte, Florida, called 911 to report a middle-of-the-night home invasion jewelry robbery. He had been shot in the foot as well. When deputies arrived, he accused a woman he knew and an unknown male accomplice with the robbery. When deputies contacted the woman, she said no, Bonfiglio had tried to get her to help him sell some jewelry and showed them text messages from Bonfiglio to back up her story. Deputies determined Bonfiglio had shot himself, most likely accidentally, and arrested him on charges of filing a false police report. Now, 8 months ago, Bonfiglio had shot himself, you see a pattern here, most likely accidentally, and had blamed someone hiding in the woods. 5 years ago, Bonfiglio called police to say that he was an Iraq war veteran with PTSD. When officers arrived, he was holding a gun to his head. After throwing several Molotov cocktails, Bonfiglio pointed his gun at an officer. The officer shot him, hitting him in the stomach. Records show he was never in the military. In 2005, he was arrested for threatening to kill then-President George W. Bush. He has at least 8 other arrests on his record, including for bomb threats, assault with a deadly weapon, and selling fake Secret Service credentials. So the real problem here isn't Bonfiglio. It's that Florida hasn't yet put him in prison for life. Lord knows they've had the opportunities and the reasons. But hey, that's Florida. Speaking of which, so just how odd and bizarre is the justice system in Florida? Check this out. Civil attorney Janice L. Jennings filed a motion against her opposing counsel in a Tampa, Florida federal court. Now, in the filing, she accused the other lawyer, John Campbell, of illegally placing a microchip in her head and torturing her at will. Yeah. And she asked the judge to order him to cease and desist doing that. You're saying something is implanted in your brain? U.S. District Judge Richard A. Lazzaro asked at the hearing. In the area of my left ear, Jennings responded. And Mr. Campbell has been using that device to somehow subject you to torture? The judge asked. I believe so, Your Honor. Yeah. This isn't the first time Jennings has had apparent mental health issues. In 2001, she reported that someone was entering her home at night and injecting her with hypodermic needles. When no evidence was found, she was fired. In a lawsuit at the time, where she served as her own attorney, of course, the opposing lawyer wrote that Jennings may not currently be able to distinguish fiction from reality. Jennings, by the way, is still listed as a lawyer in good standing and is still representing clients in court. Florida. You don't have to be crazy to work there, but apparently it helps. Anyway, on to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Burnout is a common experience among those who work in professions that serve others. Individuals in such careers are at high risk of helping and giving beyond what is healthy. Educator Debbie Holmes is the author of How to Help Others Without Losing Yourself. She joins us on the line right now from British Columbia. Hi, Debbie.
Hi.
Thanks for being on the program with us. What made you decide to delve into this particular issue and write this book about people who are helping others?
I found a lot of people in the helping professions give so much of themselves that they're losing who they are and what they are all about along the way. And we've seen a lot of people go down that road where they're just not themselves and they can't find time to do anything personally, and they just lose sight of who they are along the way.
Now, in talking to some of these people and dealing with some of these people, is part of the problem the fact that, let's be honest, they're the kind of people who have gone into these professions, so they might be have a predisposition to be this way?
Sometimes it is our own doing, so to speak, but sometimes it's also that there's a bit of an expectation when you're in the social service industry that give, 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 and nobody talks about how to take care of us along the way. Nobody says you should take some time, maybe some time off or a day off, just to do something relaxing or something fun. And I think a lot of times people forget that part of life. You just want to help other people, and you forget about the personal side of life.
So how do you get that message to sink in? What kinds of things do you get people or try to get people to do?
I ask people actually sometimes, you know, what are you doing for yourself? And when there's like, or how much time do you spend doing anything personal for yourself in a week? And when they cannot give me an answer, I say maybe it's time to start thinking about you along the way, your journey of work.
Who exactly did you write this book for?
I wrote this book for anybody that helps or in the social service industry that are helpers. However, as I have started having readership, I've had more and more people from the service sector read the book and say to me, oh, it speaks to me about how I have been giving over lots of myself too. And so it's interesting that my audience has spread to the social service or the service industry as well.
I would also assume, and I don't know if you've experienced this, but I would assume that, especially with a lot of baby boomers having older parents still around, that this is something that caregivers have to deal with within their own families.
That's very true. My family, my mother is dealing with that currently, and I gave a talk to I've given a talk to a couple homes, and one being where my grandmother is staying, and there's a lot of people that just feel so guilty when they take a little bit of time for themselves. And when you're taking care of a loved one, it is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And you have to make sure that you're not burning yourself out along the way as well.
Okay, so what kind of tips can you... What's the first step for someone to realize that this is a situation they have to correct?
I think that you look at the time that you spend. An average work week is 40, say 50 hours a week. And during the week, that's expected. You know, that's a work week. But if you look at the time that you spend outside of work, are you working that time? Are you spending all of your time with a loved one who needs you? If you look at your time over the week and you say, hey, wait a second, I'm not spending any time on me, that's where your first sign. If you lay out a week of how you spend your time or 2 weeks, it will become quite clear as to whether or not you're spending any time for you.
I would assume also that part of the problem these days is that we are always connected. That's one of the things, even in a non-service industry or health industry situation, where people are just always connected to work in one way, shape, or form via emails and cell phones and Twitter and instant messaging and the like.
Yes. You know what? There's a lot to be said about Blackberries and iPhones and how you can always get your messages from work, you always get your emails, even on your personal time. And I have a work cell phone separate from my personal phone, and I put it down on Friday night, and I do not pick it up until Sunday night or Monday morning, because that is my time.
Now, is it a situation where these people who are really working themselves to bad health, is it something that is either self-inflicted or can it be inflicted upon them? In other words, are bosses expecting too much of these people?
I think it depends on the company. I can't speak for everybody, but I know there are companies that expect you to put in a 60, 70-hour work week on a salary basis, and sometimes there are not a lot of services for people, mental health services, counseling, etc. So I think it's a little bit of both. I think also we're just hardwired to be workaholics in some industries. And unfortunately, in our society, everybody gives accolades to the workaholic, but nobody says, oh my gosh, along the way, maybe that's not a healthy way to live.
Is this more of an issue, more of a concern with women? And the reason why I say that is even if a woman is working a lot of hours outside of the home, society still expects her to you know, do more mothering than fathers do fathering, for instance.
I think it tends to be more women than men. However, there are men that I have found along the way that do the same thing. But statistically speaking, generally women, it's a higher percentage of women that do this, because you're right, we are hardwired from day one to be mothers and to do the mothering.
Do you find that this, in talking to people and dealing with people, do you find that this is something that you can see early on? And by that I mean before somebody gets into a health industry job of some kind, or can you see this manifesting itself in people who are, for instance, in school?
Yes. I know that when you're, and I can speak from my experiences, becoming a teacher, you're expected to volunteer your time in the classrooms, which is important. But I can see that between the volunteer work and the schoolwork, et cetera, sometimes that you can see the signs early. However, I think this should need to be a topic in all university courses. Like, there almost needs to be a day or two spent on, you know, what are you doing to take care of yourself in these very hard industries? I mean, the stories that are coming to you are not usually happy stories, and you're having to deal with a lot of mental health information. And I think that along the way, we have to be taught that it's okay to ask for help or get counseling ourselves, and I think that we forget that along the way.
Well, you mentioned university. Is this something that maybe we should be talking to kids about even before university, in high school, maybe even earlier? I mean, it seems to be that there's so much pressure on kids today to be overachievers and overscheduled in everything that they do in life.
I actually believe it's a topic that needs to be addressed, sure. Now, my book is focused on adults, but I can see it having relations to, I mean, I work with youth, and I use some of the lessons that I've put in the book with youth to say, don't overextend yourselves, because that's going to make you trouble along the way for them down the road, like you say.
I guess one of the things that people should do, anyone listening to this who is in a similar situation, is, for starters, take a little time and sit down and read your book, which is How to Help Others Without Losing Yourself. Correct?
Of course. But the reality is that I think everybody needs to take that moment. And when I tell people, you know, you should take 30 minutes of personal time, they all look at me like I'm nuts. But when they said, I don't think I have that much time, I'm like, make that much time. It's those types of little tips that, you know, it's important for people to do that, to take the time for themselves.
I guess it's very similar to the situation when you're in an airplane and they give you those warnings about what to do when the mask drops. Put it over yourself
first.
Before you put it over anybody else. Take care of yourself. Otherwise, you're of no use to anyone else.
Correct. And that's what's happening. People are burning themselves up to the point where they're not being able to take care of others. They're not being able to take care of a classroom of kids. They're not able to take care of their loved ones. They just get to the point where they resent the job and their life. We can't do that to ourselves anymore.
The book is called How to Help Others Without Losing Yourself. And Debbie, I thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. People can find out more information by going to your website, debbieholmes.ca. What will they find when they go to the site?
They'll find my bio, and they'll be able to find out some more information about me. And a chance just, and there's an email there if anybody has questions. And I have people email me questions all the time. And I would love to hear from people and who have questions or stories or concerns.
Debbie, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Debbie Holmes, author of How to Help Others Without Losing Yourself. You can check out her website at debbieholmes.ca. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0257. And you'll find links to Debbie's site, plus links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Chrissy DeSopo loves to garden. She's good at it, too. So good that her gardens have been featured in magazines like Country Living and Better Homes and Gardens. For 20 years, the Connecticut woman held garden tours to raise money for local charities. The tours became so popular that she raised nearly $200,000 for a variety of charities. But in the summer of 2012, a woman on the tour tripped on a walkway, hurt her ankle, and filed a claim for her injury. Then, the woman's husband threatened to sue for his own pain and suffering that he claimed was linked to his wife's hurt ankle. DeSopo, who makes a living as a painter, said that's when she realized she could lose her home because of a lawsuit. So, reluctantly, she decided to end her garden tours. Let's be fair. Excessive litigation in America affects many more people than just those who are directly sued. It affects charities, community groups, and many others, too. Find out how we're all affected. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
If you or someone you care about is struggling with food and body image issues, don't ignore the signs. Eating disorders are serious, potentially life-threatening illnesses, but recovery is possible, and you don't have to suffer alone. Call the National Eating Disorders Association helpline at 800-931-2237 or visit nationaleatingdisorders.org to take a confidential online eating disorder screening. Recovery is possible.
Let's go!
From the land that brought you maple syrup, poutine, ice hockey, and Pamela Anderson, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the author of Dancin' Schmancin' with the Scars. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way in just a matter of moments after our next guest. And, of course, this is a program that's heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Have I mentioned that already? Well, I just mentioned it again, so there you go. But I do have one more Stuff File news story to get to before we get to our next guest and the conclusion of this week's exciting program. A 60-year-old man with a blood clot has recovered, but no thanks to the driver from a Southwestern ambulance service who was ferrying him on a long trip to an emergency room, the emergency room of Derryford Hospital in Plymouth, England. That was back on April the 6th. The patient's family later reported that the driver had stopped en route to pick up two hitchhikers, one a young lady in a skimpy skirt, and take them to an on-the-way town. The patient, in pain with his toe starting to blacken, eventually had his blood flow restored and did not lose his leg. He reported that the two riders were friendly and wanted to chat about his condition, though he was not in the mood. My, what a party pooper, huh? An ambulance is one of the worst places, by the way, to have bad customer service. And by the way, it's also not necessarily the best place for speed dating either. I hope the guy who picked up the two hitchhikers was fired. Please tell me that he was. That would be fitting. Anyway, let's get to our last guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Jan Marshall just wants everyone to lighten up. She's the founder of the International Humor and Healing Institute. She's also the author of Dancin' Schmancin' with the Scars, Finding the Humor No Matter What. And Jan joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Montreal and Peter. How are you doing?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for doing this and being a guest on the program. I want to talk right off the bat about the title of your book, Dancin' Schmancin' with the Scars. Tell us how that title came about.
Well, first of all, it's scars. Your audience should know it's scars. Well, first of all, like every person on Earth, and specifically seniors like myself, there are scars. I myself, had a brain tumor and cancer and a broken nail, things like that. And so dancing is kind of a code word for just finding pleasure. Whatever gives you pleasure in life, just keep dancing with it. Just keep going is what the theme of the book is. And so it has mostly humor. Satire on the new technology and internet dating and weight and everything that everyone else is dealing with, and I find the absurdity in it just to get through it. But because of my background, as founder of the International Humor Institute, and my work with Steve Allen, was on my television show, and I was a regular on his syndicated radio show on WNEW. Everything is about humor and healing, and mostly that's what this book is about. But my background is also as a clinical hypnotherapist, and so in the book I also include tips and techniques on how to get to a joyful place even when you're going through a rough time, or especially when you're going through a rough time. That's not to say you shouldn't cry and heal and deal. I mean, I'll tell you, when I had chemo, I cried every single day for a long time. I used to wish that the tears had calories. I'd be a tall, thin blonde instead of this short, dumpy little brunette, So that's the story about this book.
Well, with all the trials and tribulations you've been through, is humor something that you've always had? Or was humor something that developed because of what you went through?
No, always had. It's always been part of my life. My parents were very funny. They were from Brooklyn, New York. My grandparents were, both sides, hysterically funny. It's just one of those things. Humor has always been part of our lives. And, of course, the grandparents came from Europe. And so they endured so much, and the only way you could get through things was really to find the humor in it eventually. And that's what we did. And so I was a newspaper columnist first. Well, actually, I used to just write stuff for magazines. And then one of the Los Angeles magazine column became a newspaper column. And so humor has always been part of, I don't know, it's a survival mechanism. But my feeling is that everybody has humor. What happens is we get so mature, you know, we think being serious means you're really with it. But the truth is, that if you look at little babies, I mean, they laugh at everything. They drop something, and you keep picking it up 400 times, nearly hysterical. And almost all the little videos on YouTube are children laughing at the silliest things. So I think we all have it, and we just have to remember it, and you retrain yourself. So one of the tips I have, Peter, is if you pretend that you are a humor columnist and your livelihood depended upon it, you must find one silly, absurd, funny thing every single day. And ultimately, just like a gratitude list, the more you list, you know, what you're grateful for, you just start seeing more and more things to be grateful for. It's the same thing with the humor. So if you look for it, all of a sudden you will find it more and more, and it'll just be all around you. And maybe, you take that list and make your own book. So that's one of the ways of finding humor. It's still there for most of us.
Now, one of the things I think is very important to mention about your book, which is Dancing Schmancing with the Scars, the fact that some of the proceeds of the book is going to support the American Cancer Society and the American Brain Tumor Association, correct?
That's correct. Both and Wounded Warriors. And now I'm also sending books and funds to fallen patriots, because these are the people who need the humor more than anybody. It's my pleasure to do it. And, you know, when I was younger, I had an uncle who was killed in the World War II, I think it was. And, you know, I know the pain that it caused the family and the generations. And so I really have a really strong soft spot for veterans and the pains and what they do for us. So that's why I donate to that. And also, you know, there's a group here. I had what was called a meningioma tumor, and it took me a year to learn how to pronounce it, frankly. Anyway, there's a group here called the Meningioma Mamas, and it's a support group for people all over the world who have had this kind of tumor or similar. And they just, you know, so I send them money as well, from the book, that is.
Well, you know, you obviously have a sense of humor. You wrote this book. It was a book that was written to obviously help others. I'm just wondering, in the course of writing the book and in doing the research and in talking about humor, did you yourself discover something about yourself you didn't know before you started writing the book?
Well, that's my grammar wasn't very good. You know, and the spell checker was my enemy, because sometimes she would put in words that I didn't want, but occasionally they were words that were better than mine. Did I discover? No, I think humor is just part of my life. It's the way I see things. Sometimes people see the worst wherever they go, at the post office, where I see people just feeling. Because they're waiting online. To me, it just makes me laugh. You know, when you see the postmaster making out with the postmistress, or she's doing her nails. I find the humor in that way. And that's maybe because I think what the doctor, the surgeon, said when he operated on my tumor, he said he found a whoopee cushion, and he left it there. So. Did you know what a whoopee cushion is?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, okay. It's a silly, goofy thing. Anyway, I'm just stating that I think everybody has humor. I don't think I discovered anything different. The more I wrote about the absurdities, the more other people would write me or call me and tell me, because some of these were columns that I did. I'm also a newspaper columnist. Oh, as a matter of fact, I write a column for a Canadian satirical newspaper, the Sage News.
Right.
Are you familiar with it?
Yes.
They're so funny and wonderful people there, Chris McKetcher and Brian Hahn. And, so we were part of a humor group online. We never met in person, and then I became one of their humor columnists. So that's my story as far as humor. It's just like breathing to me, generally.
So when you come in contact with someone who, because you say everybody has a sense of humor, when you come in contact with someone who seemingly appears to be devoid of humor, what do you do or say to try and bring it out of them, or you know, go on a rescue mission?
Well, it's something that I don't try to get it out of them, but I just try to find the lightness in the situation. And, you know, smiling, believe it or not, just a smile sometimes evokes a smile in someone else, even if they're trying not to. But I attempt to put some kind of humor to the situation, and most likely they will either smirk or smile or something. It's rare to find someone who doesn't find a teeny bit of humor. Or they pretend anyway. I mean, years ago, I remember doing a speech. I do these motivational speeches, and I did it for a Rotary Club. Do you have Rotary Clubs in Canada?
Yep.
You do. And these were only men. It was many years ago in Pasadena, California. It must have been 300 men in suits, and they all, not one woman except for me, and they sat there with their arms crossed. You know how men sit? Well, not all men. But, I mean, it's like, it's a free lunch. Let's listen to her. I'm sure it's going to be boring. Well, by the end, of course, they were silly, goofy men. They were so funny. And, of course, I poked fun at the fact there was no women. I mean, if they're really helping the world, how could you not have women who are the best at it? And so that happened. And it also happened that I did this for a bunch of doctors in the Northwest country. And there were homeopathic doctors, all of them from all of Seattle and Washington and other places. And also very, very, very serious, because they're doctors. They came in very serious. And by the end of the session, I was out of control. They were out of control. I couldn't control them. It was, they were like 14-year-old boys, because once they were allowed to, get the humor, find the humor that they sort of forgot and thought they had to be so perfectly serious and glum as doctors, they were able to lighten up. And that's the point of the humor and my columns, but mostly this book, which is just finding the silliness. I'm talking to you on an iPhone, and I have a little secretary named Siri who lives in my phone. Do you have an iPhone?
No, I don't.
Oh, well, you're lucky, because Siri is, well, excuse the expression, a bitch. What can I say? She doesn't get me. She's supposed to give you information. You call, you just say, Siri, tell me where this place is, or how do I get here? And she just doesn't get me, and it could be because of my Brooklyn accent. I'm not sure. But she, how about a Thai restaurant? Is there a Thai restaurant around here? And she says, you mean a shirt tie? No. A tie for your shoe? No, a Thai restaurant. And then she berated me for talking about my thighs. She thought that's what I was talking about. So we've had our problems, and now she wants a coffee break, and she wants to borrow my clothes. So this is a problem. That's new technology.
The book is called Dancing Schmancing with the Scars, Finding the Humor No Matter What. It's written by Jan Marshall, who apparently is having a fight with Siri. I thank you very much, Jan, for taking the time to be on the program. It was a pleasure to have a chance to talk with you.
Well, absolutely my pleasure. Thank you so much. I'll see ya.
Jan Marshall, author of Dancing Schmancing with the Scars, Finding the Humor No Matter What. Now, you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0257, and you'll find the links to Jan's site, plus also links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A Michigan woman who tried to use a shotgun to make a point during a family argument ended up shooting herself in the face. After grabbing the gun, the Fremont Township woman slammed its butt end onto the floor, causing the gun to go off and firing into her face. When police responded after receiving reports of a gunshot victim, they found the 51-year-old with a facial wound. She reportedly told officers that she wanted to use the firearm to, quote-unquote, make a point. The woman was taken to St. Mary's of Michigan in Saginaw, and she is expected to make a full recovery. Michigan police will continue to investigate the incident, but no charges have been filed at this time. So, she was trying to make a point, and she did. She proved she's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0257. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0257. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Guests of the Stuff File program stay at their own homes. Trust me, I'm the voice for this program. I know there's no budget for accommodations. I'm reading this on a futon.